Welcome to the Democracy Dispatch podcast. I'm Justin Marsh, political director at Vermont Conservation Voters. This is your weekly scoop on legislative action as we work to push forward environmental policies for Vermont. Each Monday, we will take a look back at the week prior, preview the week ahead, and speak with legislators and advocates on topics affecting our air, water, open space, and quality of life. On today's episode, I'm joined by Katie Gallagher, Sustainable Communities Program Director at Vermont Natural Resources Council, and Catherine Dimitrick, Executive Director of Northwest Regional Planning Commission, for a conversation about Act 250 reform and the proposed changes within H 687, a bill heading to the House floor this week. Before that, we catch up with Attorney General Charity Clark on S-25, a bill she testified last week on in the House Committee on Human Services, as well as other initiatives her office is following. But first, I want to bring Lauren Hurl, Executive Director of Vermont Conservation Voters, into the fold for our Session Shakedown segment. It's where we recap the last week in the State House and give a preview of what is in store. Wild week of excitement, Lauren. We saw a vote on the modernization of the renewable energy standard on Wednesday. How did that go, and what's next for that bill?
Yeah, that was very exciting. There was an extensive floor debate talking through all kinds of issues. But at the end of the day, the House passed on a really strong 99-39 with 11 absences vote. To modernize the renewable energy standard. So it really ramps up and accelerates the amount of new renewables that both Vermont and our region will need to bring online through our utilities. So we're getting to 100% renewable, which means that every person in the state can be assured that their utility is going to be all clean energy, which is super exciting.
Yes. So off to the Senate then from here.
Yes. So yeah, it's made it all the way through the House process. So we anticipate the Senate Natural Resources Committee would be taking that up sometime in the next few weeks.
Awesome. And on Thursday, we saw H 706, a bill banning the use of neonicotinoid treated seeds, reach the House floor for a vote as well. And our rising star, Representative Mike Rice, reported the bill, took hours of interrogation, and then a very strong vote of 112 to 29 with positive votes from all four parties and a couple of independents as well. So that too will head to the Senate. And speaking of the Senate, S 213 was voted out of that chamber. Tell us more about that bill and that vote.
Another great vote. So S 213 is the Flood Safety Act. This is the bill that looks at how we manage our watersheds. So we're trying to reduce flood risk by doing things like better shaping and regulating development in river corridors, better protecting wetlands, which act as sponges on the landscape, and better addressing dams, which have various effects on flood risk. So a really kind of positive conversation on the Senate floor. There was some dialogue about, you know, as we try to make sure that we're not developing in places that we shouldn't be because they put property and life at risk from flooding, like our river corridors, that we also are, you know, the legislature is also looking at making it easier to build housing in smart growth locations. So that point was definitely made by a few folks, including some flood impacted legislators who wanted to be clear that, you know, people are losing housing because of flooding and we need to be kind of addressing both simultaneously. So I thought that was, you know, a good point, and certainly both are big priorities of the legislature. So that ended up passing with a strong 24-4 with two absences vote through the Senate. And so that is now on its way to the House Environment and Energy Committee.
And speaking of them, they've been hard at work on H 687, which is the land use policy that modernizes Act 250. We've devoted our entire episode to that basically today. So just briefly go through the stages of where that bill's currently at.
So that bill's now made it all the way through the policy and money committees. So it's, we anticipate a vote through the House floor this week. So it should be an exciting time. So glad that you'll be able to give listeners an overview of that bill and what it does and what it doesn't do.
Yes, stay tuned for that. And another bill, S-259, sort of running up against the clock and is in the money committees now. What is that bill? And as we are recording this, where is it and what can we expect to see for it?
That is the Make Big Oil Pay or Climate Superfund bill. And that bill has now passed through the Judiciary and the Finance Committee. And as we're recording this right now, it still just needs to move through the Appropriations Committee. But we're anticipating that could be on the Senate floor this week, as listeners are listening to the podcast. So that's very exciting. So that bill, you know, again, looks to hold the largest fossil fuel companies accountable for helping pay for the damage that their products are causing in Vermont, such as the intensive flooding we've been seeing in the last year.
Great. And a bill that already has passed through the Senate and is finally being taken up by the House. We've got the S-25, a bill that would ban PFAS and forever chemicals from personal care products, textiles, cosmetics and athletic turf. We saw testimony this week. You gave testimony and you were able to catch up with Attorney General Charity Clark. Tell us a little bit about that and frame up that conversation.
Yeah, so House Human Services has started digging in, which we're really excited about. So this would ban PFAS chemicals and a suite of other chemicals from personal care products like your shampoos and lotions and all the things we rub and sprinkle on our bodies every day. So getting bad chemicals out of those products is great. It also bans PFAS from textiles. So think your Gore-Tex raincoat and boots, and then also gets PFAS out of artificial turf. So very exciting to see. We're calling for actually adding some additional product categories to ban PFAS from. So some other states have taken action on things like cookware and children's products and cleaning products. So we're looking to actually expand the scope of that bill and maybe add some additional toxic chemicals to what would not be allowed in personal care products. So we're hoping we can even strengthen the bill, but you know, we've got our work to do in the committee for that. But let's go listen to Attorney General Charity Clark, who has been a champion for this bill, and we catch up with her on a couple other things that her office has been up to related to the environment. So let's go check that out now. I am so excited to be here with Attorney General Charity Clark, who has been on the podcast before, but welcome back.
Thank you so much.
And it's a real pleasure because Attorney General Clark is a real environmentalist, and having someone who believes in their core in how important a healthy environment is to healthy people and communities is just such a treat and blessing for Vermont. So thank you for that.
Oh, it's truly my pleasure.
Yeah. So we just wanted to get a quick update from you, because I know between some work happening in the State House and some work that you all are doing out in the legal arena, there's a lot of important things going on that your office is doing to help ensure Vermonters are healthy and safe. So I wanted to give people a quick preview of that. So first, a couple things happening at the State House. So one bill that you all have been amazing champions on is the bill to ban PFAS and other toxic chemicals from personal care products and PFAS from textiles and turf. So why is that an issue you've taken an interest in?
I actually found that bill myself, I think. I was like, ooh, what's this? And for a few reasons, I love that bill. I worked on previous PFAS banning bills that we did, but I particularly like this bill because it addresses issues that are almost uniquely affect women, menstrual products and cosmetics, and also turf field and textiles. But, you know, I was the first woman elected attorney general. And so I'm always very sensitive to have that viewpoint of what are issues that maybe have been overlooked before, and trying to amplify those issues and identifying voices that maybe weren't heard as well before and amplifying those voices. And so when I saw this bill, it was just like a combination of things I'm passionate about, that issue of, you know, women and also the environment. I think this is it's a great example of how the Consumer Protection Act can work to protect us. This is a consumer bill. These are consumer products. And I'm really, really excited by the progress it's made. It's passed out of the Senate. I just testified on the bill yesterday in Human Services in the House, and they were really receptive to the issue. So I'm just really excited about this bill. It's I feel strongly about protecting Vermonters, and that bill is going to help me do an even better job.
That is great. Yeah, I testified this morning in Human Services, and the tone of the conversation was very much like, can't we add more chemicals to restrict that are harming Vermonters and maybe more product categories? So it was great to hear a real enthusiasm for really going after these unnecessary harmful chemicals. Mm-hmm. Yep. So thank you for that. So we'll keep people posted on the progress on that bill, S-25 in the House. Another bill that your office has weighed in on is the Climate Superfund bill, which I know you can't say much, but just wanted to thank you for coming in and speaking at a high level. This bill really builds on work that the Attorney General's office does with a polluter pays principle, first and foremost. But a space where I would love to hear from you is what's happening in the legal arena. So I know that there's a lot of lawsuits pending right now that are really looking at, you know, how we can protect Vermonters from, you know, some of these big industries that have caused harm.
Yes. First, I'll just update on the fossil fuel lawsuit that we had filed using a consumer theory, since we just talked about the Consumer Protection Act. The fossil fuel industry, I mean, this probably is not surprising to your listeners, but they knew about the harms that their products were causing the environment for decades. And they obfuscated that. They sort of suppressed the information. And consumers had a right to know. And, you know, we were lied to all these years. In addition, more recently, they have engaged in greenwashing, which is also a violation of the Consumer Protection Act and totally unacceptable. So we sued the major fossil fuel companies. That case is ongoing. What had happened is shortly after the case was filed, the defendants, the fossil fuel companies, tried to remove the case to federal court. We sued in state court. And so we have been, for the past like literally 2 years, fighting over what court we should be in. I'm so pleased to report that a couple weeks ago, maybe, the case was remanded back to state court. So now we're engaging in the discovery portion of the lawsuit. The other lawsuit that would be of interest, there's two relating to PFAS. Again, one relates to firefighting foam. That case is in a multi-district litigation in South Carolina. So that's an ongoing case. And then we also have another PFAS case that's really getting close to being ready for trial. And the defendants tried to remove the case again to federal court. So we're having that battle right now to try to get that back to state court so we can proceed. And if we're successful, I think the trial would be later this year.
That's very exciting. Well, thank you for taking on those fights. It's so important and so appreciated for Vermonters. So we'll wrap up there. I know your time is very limited and precious. Thank you for taking a few minutes to share with us some of the highlights of the way that you as Attorney General are able to be actively working to help ensure a healthy environment for all Vermonters.
Well, thank you. And thanks for all that you do.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And now it's time for our conversation on Act 250 reform and H-687. To help shape this dialogue are Katie Gallagher and Catherine Dimitrick. Katie Gallagher is the Sustainable Communities Program Director at Vermont Natural Resources Council. She has previously worked with the Mad River Valley Planning District, implementing a program of bioregional planning focused on affordable housing, sustainable transportation, and placemaking. She's also an experienced grassroots advocate, organizer, and researcher. Catherine Dimitrick is the Executive Director at Northwest Regional Planning Commission, where she has worked since 1994. Northwest Regional Planning Commission serves 19 towns, 3 incorporated villages, and 1 city located in Franklin and Grand Isle counties in the Northwest region of Vermont. In addition to leading the organization through a period of substantial growth and change in the region, she assists municipalities with local planning and zoning, coordinates regional approaches to land use, emergency preparedness, environmental conservation, transportation networks, economic development, and energy. Thank you both for being here today. I'm going to start with asking you, Katie, to frame up what exactly is Act 250, the purpose it serves, and why is it considered such a significant piece of legislation in Vermont?
Yeah. So Act 250 is Vermont's land use and development law, which means that it regulates large or regionally impactful developments through an environmental review and permitting process. So if a project triggers Act 250, it would be evaluated based on 10 kind of broad criteria. Issues are things like air, water pollution, transportation, community impacts. But what's really unique, I think, about Act 250 is that these evaluations are conducted by regional district commissions, which are made up of Vermonters, and they allow for public input and review. And so the intention was to build more of a community-informed process for shaping development based on more localized impacts. And the law is also really significant because Vermont doesn't have a statewide planning authority like a lot of other states or county government that have some planning authority. And our rural communities heavily rely on volunteers, and many towns have no planning staff or only really limited staff capacity to help with planning and zoning administration. So while a lot of towns have adopted planning and zoning since Act 250 was enacted in the 70s, the law continues to serve as a really, I think, critical backstop for developments with environmental or community impacts.
Last year, I interviewed Representative Amy Sheldon, who's the chair of the House Committee on Environment and Energy, about Vermont's sort of love-hate relationship with Act 250. And she had outlined the need for reform. And now here we are with H 687, which her committee has worked all year on so far. And it was recently voted out of committee. There's a lot in that bill, and we're going to go through mostly just the bill's nexus with planning. But let's start first with telling about the path that we've been on in recent bienniums leading up to present day. There's a lot of agencies, stakeholders, and advocates who've been hard at work on this topic for a while. So what's the recent history on where we're at with Act 250?
Yeah, that's right. So the General Assembly has worked on modernizing Act 250 for the last 7 or so years, starting with the comprehensive report on the commission of Act 250 in 2017. And so efforts really started in earnest with that. So since then, there's been many legislative studies on discrete Act 250 topics, and there's been several bills that have made it pretty far, but were either vetoed or didn't get all the way out. And so in the past year, in 2023, there was three different working groups that came together at the request of the legislature to discuss improvements to Act 250 and also other land use planning topics. So on Act 250, there is this large stakeholder process that brought together a lot of different entities that represent the environmental community, business community, developers, so on and so forth, to talk about how to best reform the Natural Resources Board, which is the entity that manages Act 250, and how to shift Act 250 jurisdiction. And so we can talk more about what they ended up recommending. But I think the other two study groups are really important in how they tie in. So one was looking at how to modernize the state designation program. So this is run by the Agency of Commerce and Community Development, and they provide incentives, financial and technical assistance for municipalities that are looking to either revitalize their village centers or strengthen their downtowns. And so this modernization was really important to help increase the accessibility of those incentives. And then the third group, which Catherine can talk more about, but is the regional planning commissions, which already do all of this work with municipalities and mapping land use and trying to determine where growth is most appropriate based on so many different inputs. And so as a result of all of these different groups, we were able to try to align them all so that our regional land use maps are aligned with our state and local incentive and regulatory programs, including Act 250, which is really important. Again, because as I said, we don't really have a much more comprehensive planning agency or entity to generally do that work. And so the stakeholders working on these three issues were able to coordinate to ensure that they move together and provide the legislature with a more comprehensive recommendation for addressing land use planning, which is what H 687 was largely based on.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, at the table all along the way for this is a very important player in each community of our state, and those are the regional planning commissions. So I want to pivot to Catherine now. Catherine, could you give us an overview of the work that a regional planning commission does, or as we might refer to them, an RPC, and the role that they play when it comes to Act 250?
Sure. So regional planning commissions in Vermont, in the absence of county government, really serve as the link between municipalities and state and federal government. So we work with our municipalities and the state on a variety of programs, from transportation planning to local planning and zoning. We do grant writing, we do emergency preparedness, brownfields redevelopment, water quality work. We really do the work that in many states is done by county level government. And we do it through a series of technical assistance programs where we work directly with our municipalities and regional and state partners to do this kind of work. In the Act 250 arena, regional planning commissions have right now a very distinct role in that one of the criteria, Criteria 10, requires a project that goes through Act 250 to be in conformance with the regional plan. Regional plans, just like municipalities, regional planning commissions do a full regional plan every 8 years. And in order to get approved in an Act 250 permit, a project has to conform to the goals and policies of the regional plan.
Okay, so I feel like we framed it up at this point, and now to dig into H 687 more in depth, let's talk location-based jurisdiction and the proposed tier system. Katie, can you walk us through that modeling?
Yeah, so H 687 proposes to change Act 250 jurisdiction to be based on the location of a project rather than just the project size, which is what it currently is. And so creating location-based tiers, as we're calling them, the idea is that it would help to streamline this environmental review and promote housing in particular is our main focus right now in terms of development, but promote it in smart growth locations like our downtowns and village centers, areas that generally have existing infrastructure, whether that's water, wastewater, transportation, things like that, while reducing harm on the other side to critical natural resource areas and working lands like forests and agriculture. And so this tiered approach would also help to provide incentives to applicants who are looking to develop a project to locate those projects based on the local and regional visions for where and how Vermont should grow. So the way that that tiered system is currently being proposed, there would be four different tiers. There's tier 1A and tier 1B, which the general tier 1 are these kind of planned growth areas. So these are places where the towns have, they have planning, they have zoning and subdivision bylaws, they have some amount of water and wastewater infrastructure or capacity, and they would have much, depending on which tier they're in and what their capacity is, they would have exemptions from Act 250, the idea being that they are able to take on a lot of that review of those environmental and community impacts that Act 250 currently manages. And then there would be tier two, which is kind of most of the state, our lower density rural areas, agricultural lands, where we want to continue to have some level of Act 250 review. And generally, these are not the areas where we're looking for greater, denser development. And then tier three would be in recognition that there are more critical natural resource areas that require a higher level of review. And those areas and what exactly that looks like is still to be determined, likely by a future kind of study to make sure that's really based on best science and practices. But that's kind of the overall framework of the location-based jurisdiction model.
Great, thank you. Yeah. So Catherine, is it the RPC's role to determine each town's tier? I believe I saw a map of Richford at a rural caucus meeting earlier this year. So I assume there's a mapping process. How do you work within each community and how do you foresee that happening should H-687 be enacted?
That's a great question. Yeah, so right now the regional planning commissions, as I noted, already do regional plans. What 687 would do would be add consistency to those regional plans. So all of our future land use plans across the 11 RPCs would be developed in the same way with the same land use categories, such as planned growth areas, village areas, et cetera. And that by doing that consistency, we enable it to serve as the foundation for these tiers that Katie mentioned for Act 250 jurisdiction. And we also will enable the regional plans to serve as the foundation for the state's designation and incentive program. And the way that we would do these maps is we would collaborate with each of our municipalities in the region to identify the areas that meet the requirements in the law. So the H-687 does have specific definitions for what those land use areas would look like. And so we would work with our municipalities to refine those areas, do the mapping. We go through a collaborative and comprehensive outreach process with the general public as well. And then once those plans are adopted by the Regional Planning Commission boards, which are made up of local representatives, we would submit them to this new Natural Resources Board, which would approve the plans. And once the plans are approved, the Act 250 jurisdiction would change in those areas.
Okay. So I know right now we're really talking about we're trying to strike this balance between housing and economic development, and then, of course, environmental conservation. So how is that balance being found in H-687? What are some of the complexities you're finding, in your region?
So one of the great things about H-687 is what Katie was mentioning earlier is this location-based jurisdiction. Right now, there's a common trigger for Act 250, regardless of where a project is located. So a trigger for housing is 10 units. So once you build 10 units in a town with planning and zoning, you are required to do an Act 250 permit. So if you build 10 units, right at the edge of a village where there's water and sewer and you're doing this nice dense development, you trigger Act 250. If you're doing 10 units, in the middle of a high value forest area, in our rural conservation areas, you trigger Act 250, and there's no difference. But what 687 would do would be acknowledge that in those village areas, in those planned growth areas, you would need to build 50 units in order to trigger Act 250. So that is one way to really encourage, through our regulatory process, the streamlining of building housing in those village and planned growth areas. And then additionally, for the larger municipalities that have some additional capability in the planning and zoning arena, Act 250 exemption could go away completely. And that, again, would help encourage housing.
Yeah. And what about the very real and current challenges that are brought on by climate change, like the flooding we saw last year? Not so much necessarily in the Northwest region of the state, but regardless, it's not immune to it. And sort of the shifts in land use patterns that we're seeing, how are those taken into consideration in this bill?
That's another great question. One of the things that H-67 does is it enables us some flexibility to identify planned growth areas that build away from some of our traditional villages that are in the floodplain. So it enables us to use our regulatory process to encourage development to move away into more upland areas that make sense from a land use development pattern that can take some of the dangerous, you know, build a little bit away from some of the more dangerous areas. And if you think about a community like Johnson, whose downtown was really decimated by the floods, and they have some ability to expand their village uphill and to really enable the community to thrive in this era of climate change impacts. And H-687 would allow the community to use a regulatory process to help incentivize that.
And I mentioned there are many components to H-687. Katie, what are some of the other elements of this bill?
So there's a lot in there that we don't have time to get to today. But one important piece of the Act 250 reform that we haven't discussed yet is related to governance. So H-687 proposes to reduce the appeal process burden and improve public engagement by reinstating a professional what would we call an environmental review board or ERB. So they would handle appeals and administer the law. And this approach is intended to streamline processes, reduce costs, provide clearer guidance to those regional district commissions and applicants, and try to ensure greater consistency across Act 250 decisions across those districts. Because one of the things that we've heard over the years is that there can be that inconsistency across those regional district commissions, again, because they're made up of Vermonters, and folks can interpret decisions or criteria or impacts differently. There's been a concern about the cost of going through Act 250, the time and uncertainty that it might take, which adds challenges to development, especially today when we're facing this really severe housing crisis and costs of labor and materials is also skyrocketing. So I think the governance piece is something that's really important to help with those pieces as well, while making sure that we're not losing that environmental review, but again, trying to make it more efficient. And then I'll just mention that outside of Act 250, one of the important pieces of the bill is that it updates the state designation programs. So the idea here is that they're trying to improve municipal access to the benefits and technical assistance I mentioned previously that the state designation programs provide. And so generally, we're trying to increase smart growth investments that will accelerate housing growth that's so desperately needed, while also helping with downtown revitalization, climate resilience, as we were just discussing, especially, you know, flood resilience and how to protect from future flooding events and natural hazards, and really focusing investments on safe and walkable streets that are oriented towards pedestrians and can help to create these really livable neighborhoods in our downtown areas that are can accommodate our diverse population needs.
All right, so next steps for H-687, we're seeing it brought to the House floor this week. Katie, to close us out, what message would you like to leave with listeners today?
So I think that we have a really unprecedented opportunity with the consensus that has been built among a number of stakeholders over the past year to get to a really productive compromise on reforming Act 250 and aligning it again with our regional and local planning initiatives. I think that this is so critical as we face climate change and potential migration, either as a result of climate impacts or remote work. We know that our communities are changing, and this is a really important opportunity for us to help to guide that change.
Well, I want to thank you both for taking the time to chat with me today and for your respective work on this very important policy. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That was Katie Gallagher of Vermont Natural Resources Council and Catherine Dimitrick of Northwest Regional Planning Commission. I want to thank our guests, Katie Gallagher, Catherine Dimitrick, Attorney General Charity Clark, and of course, Lauren Hurrell for assisting me. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and give us a rating wherever you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media. You can subscribe to our emails, see our legislative environmental scorecard, which we have recently updated with a slew of new votes this week, and learn more about our work and policies by visiting vermontconservationvoters.org. We will be back next Monday with a brand new episode. Until then, thanks for listening.